Let there be you. Let there be me.
Happy Mother's Day, everybody. That's the voice of Sam Fazio, and I'm Rick Cogan. We're both wishing you a happy Mother's Day, aren't we, Sam?
We are. Happy yeah. Mother's Day, everyone.
You are one of the most interesting vocalists or musicians I've come across in a long time. We met about, I don't know, 3 years ago or so, and you told, and I want you to tell it again, the remarkable story of... You went to Holy Cross High School in River Grove. You studied voice and opera at DePaul. You then decided, like a crazy person, you and some young woman, hey, let's go to Vegas and try to make it out here.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, it was sort of our stop before going to Los Angeles in our minds, but we never made it there. So, and we thought Vegas, we could sort of work in some casinos. It was the late 80s, so Vegas was a little different than it is now.
Yeah.
And it was fun. It was interesting, but it was also a little scary. We were young, away from home, so it didn't last too long.
What did your folks think? I mean, it's one thing to study voice and opera at college. It's quite another thing to say, hey, Mom and Dad, I'm going to Vegas.
Yeah. I don't think they were too happy about the voice and opera in college even, because that didn't seem like a very good a choice for a career, right?
Yeah, no, sure. Yeah. No, parents, you know, there are often parents, depending on how, you know, where they're from, who a career in the arts is not always seem like the most logical or money-making venture one can do.
Right. They were supportive, though. I went ahead and, you know, and moved right after graduating college, and we tried it out for about a year.
What drew you into music in the first place? Did you sing as a kid? Was there music in your house?
Yeah, there was some music in our house, but I sang a lot as a kid. I was really creative. We took a lot of road trips with the family, and I would write songs in the back of the station wagon.
Oh, interesting.
You know, yeah, just put on shows in the basement with my brothers and sisters, and, you know, had my parents come down for cheese and crackers and watch our show. And so,
what did your folks do?
What's that?
What did your folks do?
For a living, I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, my dad worked for People's Gas for almost 50 years.
Wow.
Yeah, and my mom was a hairdresser. Yeah.
So those are not like the arts kind of jobs.
Right, yeah.
But they did support you when you did this.
They did, yeah.
How did you get caught up in Vegas for a while? And is that why you never, was your intention, you were called, you and your friend, Reservations for Two, which I think is a nice name for us.
We were, yes. My friend Maria and we went there after college. We focused on a lot of duet type songs, and we played in some of the casinos in the in the lounges.
Yeah,
we were at there was a comedy club called Catch a Rising Star. It was in some of the Hilton hotels, so we did some of those. We opened up for comedians, so it was fun. But like I said, it was just. It wasn't the lifestyle. I didn't like Vegas very much then.
Yeah.
You know? It was just
why did you never make it to L.A.? Why did you never drag yourselves out there?
I decided to come home. Just missed home. We were young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when you came home, though, you also played around for a while. I mean, performed for a while. And then said, in classic fashion, which I'm sure almost every musician has said at one point, I got to make a living somehow.
Yeah. I mean, I needed to make a living, and I also was sort of tired of the rejection, you know? And so I think that I took it a lot more personally when I was younger, the rejection. Now
you don't care because you're used to it,
And plus, you sort of have a different motivation now. So that's why it was when I came back to it in 2009 with that time off, it just felt different because I had different motivation.
Well, you came back before that. You came back and you studied gerontology at Northeastern Illinois. And then you got a PhD in developmental psychology from Loyola.
I did.
Were you performing while you were in school, or did you give it up and concentrate fully on school?
I pretty much gave it up and concentrated fully on school and work. And I would sing at people's weddings and things like that. People came over, I'd play piano and sing for them, and everyone would be like, you should do something with this. You should go back to this. And so then finally I decided to.
What was it? I know we've talked about this a little bit, but what was it in... And I think around 2009, you really got drawn back into music.
I decided that there was always something missing from my life. So music was always a part of my life growing up and, throughout college. And, I always felt like it was missing. That's why I still sort of did it with weddings and at home. And I just decided to make this commitment to give it a try and give it a real good try, not as, you know, not just like I did when I was in my 20s, try and give up.
Was one of it, were you worried that you might, and I don't know how old you were then, maybe 30s, an early midlife crisis or something, that you were going to one day wake up at 50 or 60 and go, you know, damn it, I should have really done this.
Was maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. It was also just something was missing, and I just, you know, I'm just like, you know, I went back and studied with my old voice coach that I studied with in college and you know, cut a CD and a demo CD and just started getting out there. And
how had your voice changed? What did you, you know, I think in every artist's life, and I consider you an artist, life will change, will not maybe physically change your voice, but it'll certainly change the way you interpret a song, change the way you feel about a song. Did you sense that when you went back to training?
Yeah, I mean, my voice was much more mature. You know, I think that, and also the songs that I wanted to sing were different. And so in my 20s, I was focusing a lot on pop. I wasn't focusing on jazz standards.
Yeah.
When I went back, it just seemed like this was much better fit for me. You know, jazz standards or pop classics, but sung with sort of a jazz standard feeling to them. Yeah.
Did you do this in 2009 as you started to get more comfortable with your teaching and more comfortable with the music out there? Did you start to think to yourself, well, maybe I can. I have a steady full-time job with the Alzheimer's Association in Chicago. Are you still the director of special projects?
I am.
You have a steady job. As you're going through this, did you then start to think to yourself, wait a minute, maybe I could balance a performing life with my professional life?
Yeah, as things started happening, then I was like, wow, this is happening, and I think I could do this. I was lucky to be working part-time at the Alzheimer's Association.
Yeah.
I have a little bit more flexibility, and I still do, so I'm able to sort of juggle both of these. But, you know, because sometimes with the late-night hours, it's hard to get up for
There aren't many straight jobs where you can balance a jazz, singing, or performing career, right?
Yeah. Especially the days when I was, you know, really out there at the Drake, you know, 4 or 5 nights a week. It was hard to get up in the morning.
What did you, we'll take a little break, then I want, certainly want people, you've been compared, and it's pretty high praise to not only Harry Connick Jr., but to Frank Sinatra. And so I want people to hear you, and we'll talk about the upcoming show, May 20th at the Empire Room with Kim Gordon. She'll be on later in the show to talk about why she likes performing with you. When you came back to the club scene here, and started to make those rounds, which can be difficult to do. How was it for you after that reluctant interlude away from it? Was it easier for you? You said you dealt with rejection better.
Yeah, it was a little easier for me. And I really lucked out. Once I got that CD out and started, you know, I did a couple shows at Davenport's to start out with. But then I got a couple nights up in the Palm Court at the Drake Hotel. And that really started everything snowballing, you know. And it was really a great opportunity for me to sing up there.
It's a fascinating career. If there's any hallmark here, it's follow your passion. I mean,
yeah.
I really think Sam Fazio is a great example of how that pays off. You'll hear him. He's been compared to Harry Connick Jr. and some guy named Sinatra after this short commercial break.
I have often walked down the street before.
That's Sam Fazio singing a certain tune from My Fair Lady, which is getting a production at the Lyric Opera. We've got him back here. He's come back to Chicago in 2009, felt the call of music again, and started taking vocal lessons with his former teacher, cut a demo CD, and started playing a lot. Sam, you got, I don't know, it's not lucky, But you must feel pretty fortunate to have gotten, you had a steady gig at the Coke Door. You played every single place as a singer.
Yes, I'm very lucky. Luck and I guess determination, because I was really, really sort of pushing myself out there, meeting with people, sharing the CD, following up by email, and, you know.
How did you find the scene here? I mean, did you find it as you know, there, of course, there's some, you know, jealous types on the jazz scene here, but for the most part, it's a pretty nurturing kind of scene, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah, definitely, definitely. I think that I found folks pretty welcoming, especially other musicians, you know, because, you know, you need to find people to play with. And,
sure.
And yeah, so.
When you found a guy who has become your really regular steady pianist, right?
Yes, yes, Chris White. He was actually playing for one of my lessons when I started taking lessons again. He was sort of the accompanist, and we started working together after that, and he's always been my number one. He does all my arrangements for me when we travel to New York or to the Midwest to performing arts centers. He always comes as the musical director. So
I can't keep these people in suspense anymore. Let's hear a whole song. You selected it. What are we going to hear?
Yeah, let's hear I Wish You Love. It's the title track from my second CD.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, enjoy.
Goodbye. No use leading with our chins. This is where our story ends. Never lovers, ever friends. Goodbye. Let our hearts call it a day. But before you walk away, I sincerely want to say, I wish you bluebirds in the spring to give your heart a song to sing, and with a kiss, but more than this, I wish you love. And in July, a lemonade will cool you in some leafy glade. I wish you health and more than wealth. I wish you love. My breaking heart and I agree that you and I would never be. So with my best, I will set you free. I wish you shelter from the storm, a cozy fire that keeps you warm. But most of all, when snowflakes fall, I wish you love. wish you bluebirds in the spring, to give your heart one song to sing. And with a kiss, but more than this, I wish you love. And in July, a lemonade will cool you in some leafy glade. I wish you health, and more than wealth, I wish you love. My breaking heart and I agree that you and I could never be. So with my best, my very best, I'll set you free. I wish you shelter from the storm, a cozy fire that keeps you warm. But most of all, when snowflakes fall, I wish you love. But most of all, when snowflakes fall, I wish you love.
That's pretty good, Sam.
Well,
what do you think, Sam Fazio? That's your second CD. What CD is that on?
It's called I Wish You Love.
And you can, Sam's website is SAMFAZIO Music. SAMFAZIO Music.com. What do you think when you hear yourself sing?
Don't really like to listen to myself.
I could sense that, man.
I was talking to you over it.
Yeah, I know, man. I'm thinking, why did you listen? Why is that?
I don't know. It's just always a little, you find everything that you're doing wrong and you could do differently.
Well, and one of the things about the kind of music you sing is there is no, it changes every time you sing it.
Right.
True. I mean, there are different inflection, different tone, different feelings. You're in a different mood.
Right. And with this CD, it really, you know, it's really not overly produced. And so, you know, when you're singing out in a club, you're singing out in a club. Sometimes you're a little flat. Sometimes you're right on. Sometimes you're trying something out. But that's the fun of jazz music, I think.
Having seen you perform a couple times, you really do seem to form a relationship with the crowd. I don't know if you feed off them, but it is a relationship, is it not?
It is. I think I learned a lot of that from the Coke Door, because you're so close to folks down there. And I think the people who really survive down there are the people who could feel out what the crowd wants and sing for them. You know, that's what
they're
there for.
The Coke Door is the bar in the so-called basement of the on the ground floor of the Drake Hotel. It used to be famous as the home for a piano-playing singer named Buddy Charles for many years, and now they've done a number of other things. How long was that gig for you?
I was there for 6 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's steady work.
Yeah, and a lot of different, went from, you know, Wednesdays through Saturdays to just, in the end, I was just there on Fridays, and now I go back every once in a while. Still feels like home to me.
It's a good room. It's sort of changed over the years.
It has.
It's still a great, great, great room. Now, this Empire Room thing, which we'll talk about after the news even more, how did this come about?
Well, I started at the Empire Room maybe about 3 years ago as part of a New Year's Eve event called Big Night Chicago.
Yeah.
Highball Events does this. And so I started that with a lot of different rooms, eight different bands. But then I was in the Empire Room for this this red velvet rope, sort of like the VIP ticket, where people who wanted sort of a quieter night in a more classier room.
Yeah.
And so I started working with them there in the Highball Events. And then it just sort of continued on to two or three shows a year. So we always do New Year's, Valentine's Day, and then one other sort of theme show, which this one is called The Legends of the Empire Room.
Who fashions this show, you and this organization and Kimberly Gordon? I mean, and define it for me, Legends of the Empire Room. I mean, I saw Carol Channing there. That's
right.
My legend.
Right. Well, we all got together, and thought about different legends we could think of who performed there. And we were looking more in the 60s and the 70s. So Nat King Cole, Bobby Darin, Pearl Bailey, Carol Channing, Ella Fitzgerald. not the Frank Sinatra time, but we're looking for some other folks. And, you know, they all sang all the songs. So, there's a lot of good songs you could do.
Any song you want.
Yeah.
And you do, it's an homage to these people, I suppose, right?
It's an homage to the people, but really to the room, too. We set up the room, so it's back to how it used to be, where it was sort of the place you would go for a dinner and a show.
Oh, no question.
So it starts out with people having dinner, some piano music, and then the floor show begins. After the floor show's over, then there's some time for dancing with our six-piece band.
It's on May 20th. We're going to get talk to Sam a little more and get Kimberly Gordon on here and see what she thinks about playing with Sam.
Every time I think of you, I always catch my breath.
That again is Sam Fazio. I'm going to have him leave his CD here so you can hear him throughout the entire show. How's that?
Great.
That game,
thank you.
You can hear him with the inimitable, the one and only Kimberly Gordon, Saturday night at the one and only Empire Room. It's a May 20th show. It's called Legends of the Empire Room. Hi, Kimberly. It's been a long time.
Hi, Rick.
Good to talk to you. How did this show come to be, and how exciting is it to play the Empire Room?
Oh, well, as a fourth-generation Chicagoan, you can imagine I am thrilled to be at the Empire Room.
Yeah, yeah, it holds.
It's everything.
Yeah, it holds. It's a special kind of place, and you and your family also have some history with the old Shea Paree, do you not?
Yes, I do. My grandfather was a dancer at the Shea Paree, and my mother was a camera girl.
Oh, how neat.
For people who don't know, being a camera girl at the Shea Paree was equivalent to being a Playboy bunny.
No question.
Playboy. It was a wonderful job, and she got it from her friend Sam Giancana, who was a childhood friend of hers. They went to school together, and he got her the job there.
Well, he could get anybody a job anywhere. We know that. He could get a job for anybody anywhere. They were schoolmates. That's so funny, Kimberly. What are you, I mean, when you and Sam, you know, the whole notion of legends of the Empire Room, you have a lot of people to pick from. How do you select who you're going to pay homage to?
Well, I think, as Sam said earlier, it was about the time period.
Yeah.
So we looked at the 60s and 70s and picked out some people who maybe aren't represented every day when you're thinking of tributes. Pearl Bailey, gosh, I mean, I grew up with her. I love Pearl Bailey. Carol Channing, Hello Dolly. I mean, that was such a big part of my childhood. Nat King Cole. So it just kind of, it was organic. It happened easily. Sam's a great curator of the music, so...
Well, you both are great appreciators of the era, and so tell me, Sam and Sam Fazio and Kimberly Gordon, it's going to be made up like the it's going to be as if it was in the 60s or 70s, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's going to be, you know, starting out with a nice dinner. So there's the whole show's from 6:30 to 11. We have a couple different packages. So you could come for the dinner package or the cocktail only package. So from 6:30 to 8:30 is dinner with some live piano music, some dancing, then just a short break. And then at 9 o'clock, the show starts for an hour and a half with Kimberly and I doing some songs separately as well as some songs together. Like,
are you going to do duets, Kimberly?
We are.
Which ones? Oh, yes. What are you going to do?
Walking My Baby Back Home.
Oh.
Hello, Dolly, right?
Yes.
We got a few other ones we're thinking about on the Sunny Side of the Street.
You know, I think, you know, Sam and I were talking off the air, Kimberly, about the notion that these kinds of shows are too often lumped into that big old bucket called nostalgia, where I don't really think that needs to be the case anymore, because I think with two great talents like you and Sam, these shows and this music totally stands on its own in a contemporary society. Don't you think, or am I being making too much of that?
No, it does stand on its own. It does. And the music, especially in this town and the nightclub scene and the American Songbook, are always revered and cherished and celebrated here.
Yeah, we just need some of the younger generation to get involved with it, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they're coming around.
Yeah,
they're
I think, you know, we were also talking off the air. I think they are coming around because there's some, you know, with two grand talents like you, Kimberly Gordon and Sam, it is, I mean, it's, to my mind, it's as hip. I don't know what's hipper than this kind of thing. I really don't. You know, and I know you've attracted, you know, you go in the Green Mill on any given night, and it's not all, you know, 68-year-old guys drooling in their beer. I mean, that's a young crowd there, right?
Yes, yes. Well, there's the music education system has really helped bring the young people out to the clubs.
And Sam, do you find that when you perform too? I mean, are you sensing a sort of an upsurge in a more youthful kind of audience?
I do. I think you still have sort of the old staples who are sort of a bit older, who are, you know, just the standard listeners. And then there is a younger crowd, especially in some of the hotel bars. But I think it's more of a surprise when they come in and hear music, and then they're really into it. Then they start tipping and requesting songs. But, you know, I think that people aren't used to live music. And so sometimes it's sort of reintroducing people to live music and the art of listening, not talking over it.
Yeah, I think, you know, what I think the young folks have missed is the unbelievably pleasant intimacy of live music, where you don't have to totally, especially in a setting like this, totally shut up as if you were in a concert venue.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a certain intimacy and a relationship going on with the performers that is rare.
Yeah. And I think in the Empire Room, too, we're going to have that intimacy, but also this sort of grand ballroom. I mean, the stage is still the stage from, you know, when they used to have big orchestras up there. It was shortened a little bit, so we can't have a big orchestra up there. We have to have a small orchestra up there. But we're still going to be down on the floor, the floor show, and I'm sure Kimberly's going to have something spectacular on. There's not much that I can wear except
suit. Yeah, you
suit,
just wear your old, what are you wearing, a tuxedo?
I'm going to wear a nice suit.
Kimberly, what are you going to wear? You have your outfit picked out?
Black.
Good.
Black and gardenias.
Yeah, she's gonna have a flower in her hair, I'm sure.
An homage.
I love gardenias, and I bought my first one at Mangel's Florist in the Drake Hotel.
That's so cool.
When I was 19, I got one for the Drake Christmas party because I used to serve tea in the Palm Court there. Mangel's was the only place in town that carried gardenias fresh in the case. And Mr. Mangel told me a great story where back in the day he used to supply all of the rooms, including the Palmer House, with all the gardenias in town. They supplied all the gardenias, including there was a couple bars downtown that would put floating gardenias in their cocktails.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. And they think
so
these
I
new.
Love a gardenia. I love a gardenia. I'll be wearing gardenias. And I like to wear black when I perform because then my hands sort of become an instrument as well when I'm expressing.
Well, and, you are a one of a kind performer, Kimberly Gordon. And this is a Saturday night, May 20th, Legends of the Empire Room with Sam, who is sitting here, Sam Fazio. You can go get tickets at Highball Events. That's H-I. B-A-L-L events.com. You can go for dinner. There's a dinner package. That sounds really cool because the Empire Room, for those of you who've never seen it, is really one of the great rooms in the history of Chicago.
Definitely.
And to have these two perform. Kimberly, it's so lovely to talk to you again, and you're one of my favorite all-time performers in this town.
Thank you, Rick. It's been too long.
It really has. It really has. I don't get up as much as I should, or certainly certainly not as much as I used to, that's for sure. Kimberly, knock 'em dead Saturday. It sounds like a great show.
Thanks, Rick.
My pleasure. That's a lovely person to be performing with, Sam.
Sure is.
You got to call me and let me know how it goes because I'm trying to induce, and I'll do it the rest of this week too, trying to induce people to go. It was a great time. the Empire Room in the 60s and 70s, and you're turning it into a great time now. So continued success. You've had an amazing career.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the support.
My pleasure. And leave that CD here so we can play more
it's
of your
yours.
Music. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be back after a little commercial break, and you will hear the first podcast, of Lise Graham. She talked about it last week, the new producer of the show. You will hear it because it's really good.